Fiber optic capabilities may be coming to the Upper Lynn Canal, and trollers want more chum. It's the KHNS Local News. I'm Margaret Friedenauer. Those stories and more up next. Faster internet may be on the horizon for the Upper Lynn Canal. Alaska Power and Telephone is proposing laying a submarine fiber optic cable from Juneau to Haines and Skagway. The company has filed an application with the state for an easement for laying the cable on the seafloor. It would follow the existing underwater cable and run about 86 miles. It would come ashore at the same place the existing cable does in Haines, near Lutac Inlet. In Skagway, the proposed landing site for the cable is causing more discussion. The company wants to bring the fiber optic cable ashore at Smuggler's Cove in order to avoid work planned at the harbor for the Gateway project. But some in the community are questioning whether a utility use is allowed at the Smuggler's Cove area. AP&T manager Darren Belisle in Skagway says more details on the project will be released next week. He says it's unclear right now of the timeline for the project. Fiber optic cable would greatly increase internet bandwidth capabilities for Skagway and Haines, although Belisle says it's unclear right now when that increased capability would be made available to customers. But he says the current system used to provide internet service through AP&T, called the Southeast Alaska Microwave Network, could be maxed out in the next 3 to 5 years. Belisle says fiber optics provide essentially unlimited capability. It's also possible Yukon and Whitehorse will want to tie into the fiber optics capability on the Skagway side. Internet capability is an issue, especially during the summer in Skagway. With sometimes 10,000 or more cruise ship passengers a day, the network in Skagway easily gets overloaded. We'll have more on this story in the coming weeks as AP&T provides more information. The Walker-Mulott administration announced Wednesday that it's set up a working group to address the transboundary mining boom near Southeast Alaska. The news comes as British Columbia's Mine Regulation Agency plans meetings with Alaska fishermen and tribal groups. Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld reports.
Lieutenant Governor Byron Mulott heads up the working group, which includes commissioners of the State Departments of Natural Resources, Environmental Conservation, and Fish and Game. It's looking into longstanding concerns about British Columbia mines slated to open or reopen on rivers that flow through Southeast.
We view the entire range of activity on that side, which can affect the waters and the habitat of those river corridors, as important to Alaska's interests and to our national interests, and we will engage and pursue that interest vigorously.
Mulott says the group is just getting started and is gathering information. A new transboundary mines group, Inside Passage Waterkeeper, recently petitioned the administration to seek government-to-government talks with British Columbia's premier. The group wants the governor to ask for a moratorium on new tailing storage dams, including one being tested at the Red Chris mine in the Stikine River watershed. Mulott says he's not yet ready to pursue any particular course of action.
My desire is that we not seek specific responses until we understand fully what we are engaged with. But that doesn't mean that anything is off the table either.
BC Premier Christy Clark is an ardent advocate of mining. She's added staff to the Provincial Mining Agency to speed permitting so new projects can open sooner. Bill Bennett, her energy and mines minister, came to Anchorage in November to explain his government's approach and actions. He met with state officials and addressed Alaska's Mining Association, but he says he realizes he was not with the right people.
We need to make a second trip. Whether I go along on that trip or not is still up in the air, but we certainly need to reach out and give the people of Southeast Alaska an opportunity to meet and talk to our officials.
Bennett wants to engage fisheries and tribal groups where provincial officials can explain their mine review process. It's unclear whether environmental groups will be included.
Anyone who wants to sit down and have a rational, well-informed discussion, we're prepared to meet with them. We're not really going to come to Alaska and be lectured.
We would welcome the mining minister, Bill Bennett, with open arms.
Rob Sanderson, Jr. co-chairs the United Tribal Transboundary Mining Working Group. He's also a vice president of the Tlingit Haida Central Council. Both groups cite August's Mount Polly tailings dam breach in eastern British Columbia. A report reviewing what went wrong there estimated a similar dam would fail every 5 years, releasing hazardous water and rock.
That's one thing that's been lacking is consultation, transparency.
The date and location of the British Columbia Mine Ministry's visit have not been set. I'm Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau.
Southeast trawlers want to see an increase in their share of hatchery-produced chum salmon. In testimony before the Alaska Board of Fisheries on Wednesday, trawlers asked for management revisions that would give them more time and opportunity to target this increasingly valuable species. KCAW's Robert Woolsey reports.
The logic of the trawlers' request is not hard to follow. Seiners catch fish by the hundreds or thousands, gillnetters catch fish by the tens or hundreds, and trawlers catch fish one at a time. And so they want more time. In the not-too-distant past, chum were hardly worth catching, and they wouldn't often be caught on king or coho gear. Sitka troller Matt Laurie told the Board of Fish that his fleet has figured out how to land chum.
While these methods and gear have improved catch rates, trolling is still a hook and line fishery, and as such cannot compete with the net fisheries without extensive access in time and place.
Since trollers began targeting chum several years ago, they found it difficult to hit their allocation. In 2003, trollers sold chum for around 16 cents per pound. More recently, it's been as high as 90 cents per pound, an increase of over fivefold, though the price remains extremely variable. Proposal 227 asks the board to reauthorize the chum salmon troll management plan for northern Chatham Strait and to allow trollers to fish 7 days a week. That's up from 4 consecutive weekdays. Still, even though hatcheries like Sitka's Northern Southeast Regional Aquaculture Association and Juneau's DIPAC are producing millions of chum, the commercial pie can only be divided into 3 pieces, troll, gillnet, and seine. Linda Danner, who chairs the Chum Trollers Association, voiced her support for Proposal 176, which would reallocate hatchery-produced chum in favor of trollers, but she understood it would come at a price.
To improve the number of fish caught by the gear group lowest in allocation requires some other gear group to give up fish.
Danner argued that the hatchery boards and the state's regional planning teams are dominated by the net fisheries and that trawlers stand little chance of improving their lot without the board's support.
If the two privileged gear groups on these boards are unwilling to participate in fair and reasonable sharing, the gear group lowest in allocation will never be able to outvote them. That's the loophole. We call it two wolves and a sheep voting on what's for dinner.
The Northern Southeast Regional Aquaculture Association, or NSARA, has added 2 new chum release sites in Southeast this year, Crawfish Inlet, about 35 miles south of Sitka, and Southeast Cove on Kuyu Island near Cake. Crawfish Inlet especially may be a good site for trawlers who already are converging in Sitka Sound to fish for deep inlet chum. Nevertheless, mistrust is hard to overcome. Hatchery fishing schedules for the 3 different gear groups have been a source of tension, especially in the terminal areas, or honey holes, where returning fish are most concentrated. Sitka troller Dave Ritchie remains skeptical of NSARA's capacity to resolve the issue.
By contrast, trollers have appealed repeatedly and proactively to the NSARA board to correct this allocated problem. Due diligence in seeking our fair share of the honey hole allocated harvest has been met with a mixture of indifference, disgust, and hostility.
A final chum proposal doesn't really slice the pie at all. It would just allow trollers to keep their forks in it. Proposal 229 was submitted by Sitka troller Matt Donahoe.
229 is not asking for time and a terminal harvest area. It is not seeking to displace any existing fishery. No gear group conflicts would result.
Donahoe's proposal would allow trollers fishing in the home shore area to cross into northern Chatham Strait without picking up their gear. It would save time, Donahoe said, and give trollers more access to chum.
Yesterday, Mr. Chairman, when you asked Carl Peterson what could be done to help bring trollers up to their allocation, I was in the audience like some sort of kid who was, you know, had to go to the bathroom. And I know. Past 229, and passed 227. Thank you.
The Alaska Board of Fisheries took almost two full days of public testimony at its Sitka meeting before moving into the so-called Committee of the Whole, where they will attempt to consolidate similar proposals and iron out other details with the stakeholders and the public before moving into formal deliberations. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Robert Woolsey.
For KHNS News, I'm Margaret Friedenauer. Thanks for joining us this evening. You can listen to and read local news stories on our website at khns.org.